Welcome back to Open Line on WOSU 820. I'm Charlene Brown. A federal law called the Family Educational Rights and Privacy Act, or FERPA, was originally passed 35 years ago to shield student grades and transcripts from public inspection. But over the years, it has become a tool that's been used by major universities to withhold important information about their sports programs and more. My guests this hour are Columbus Dispatch reporters Jill Riepenhoff and Todd Jones, who spent 6 months trying to pull back that veil of secrecy. Jill, what prompted you to look into this? I don't think most of us have been aware even of the FERPA law.
This has been something that we've run up against for about the past 4 years or so as different NCAA investigations surfaced involving Ohio State. And when we would request records, we would be denied and whatnot. And just trying to sort of get at why that was happening. And we did a little poking years ago, kind of seeing what we would see from other schools. And we saw that there were some disparities. And it just kind of stuck in my craw, if you will. And that's why we decided to take the national look and see how widespread the latitude of interpretation is.
And Todd, this was a 6-month investigation, and it involved, 119 different colleges?
Yeah, we decided that we were going to send them out to all the 119 schools that play at the top level of college football, and just to see, what kind of feedback we would get from them, what kind of answers, and see if there was any consistency or not. And it was really – the 6 months was more in terms of just waiting for the records. We sent the letters out around Thanksgiving, and they came in at various times. And then really in the last couple months, we did more of the reporting.
And what specifically did you ask for from these colleges? Because it was consistent with each of them. You asked for the same kinds of records.
Right. We asked for the exact same records. We asked for flight manifests, which are the list of the team and coaches, et cetera, who fly to away games. We'll call ticket lists, which are the complimentary ticket admissions that football players are allowed to have, because, of course, they can have mom and dad or whoever come to watch them play. We ask for a list of or the documents that show where football players work during the summer. A lot of those jobs are arranged by boosters and are arranged by the coaches themselves.
And why is it important to know these particular pieces of information? What are you looking for behind those answers?
Yeah, those documents seem rather mundane, frankly, but it shows partly who has access to football teams in terms of boosters or people that are not affiliated directly with the program, that you're not the coaches, not the marching band. And those kinds of things have – those boosters have been able to cozy up to athletes across the major colleges and cause trouble and bring down some programs, get them into big trouble.
Can you give us an example of a program that kind of thing has happened?
Well, there's one right here in our own city, Ohio State. There was a booster named Robert Q. Baker a few years back. He was found to be giving money to quarterback Troy Smith, who, of course, went on to win the Heisman Trophy. Mr. Baker was banned from the program in his luxury suite at the stadium. And that's just one example of many, many problems that these big-time programs especially run into. When you have people who have a lot of interest and a lot of money and they start hanging around a program, it can lead to trouble. And so what we were just trying to find out, well, who are some of the people that Jill said, have access to the program? And so in that way, we were just trying to show some oversight here. Let's find out who has access.
And how responsive were the universities when you made your request to them?
It was all over the board. The 19 schools in the Football Bowl subdivision, formerly known as Division 1A, are private schools and are under no obligation whatsoever to provide us any information, and did not. From the 100 that were public schools, there were several schools that we couldn't get any records from because of their public records laws require that you be a resident of the state, Arkansas, for example, or Pennsylvania, for example. That's why we have nothing from Penn State. But then other schools, what we got was all over the board in terms of how much was withheld and how much was provided. There was no real pattern.
Also in terms of how much they would even charge for the records, typical price was, you know, $40 for some hours that their people spend in copying fees. A lot of schools gave it to us for free. Then you had schools like the worst case example was the University of Maryland wanted $35,000 for the same records that most schools were given to us for free and at most were charging maybe $50.
They wanted
$35,000
$35,000
Right.
To answer a question about who flies
to see
with
the records,
sports teams
yeah, right.
and so on.
Right.
Well, that was not really typical. I mean, there were some very, very high prices attached
right.
to those copying fees
right.
or whatever term they decided to use for it. Hundreds of dollars.
Right.
Why would they do that?
Well, it's a deterrent. I mean, it's another way to keep you from getting access to the records. Then you have to sit there and say, is it worth us to spend $800 to get these records if they're going to be redacted? So they know that's another tool for them to say, well, okay, well, if they want them, well, we'll make them pay.
So even in some cases, if they sent the material, it was heavily redacted, or in other words, names were blacked out or dates or places that would allow you to identify who was involved and when and where it took place.
For example, at the University of Houston, we had to pay $60 for records, and I got 3 pages. So it was essentially $20 a page.
That was just to sort of stonewall you?
Yes. It's clearly a deterrent. And while this isn't about journalists, if anybody off the street, you know, those records belong to the public, and anybody off the street should be able to walk in and ask to see them. They've paid for those records already with their tax dollars and whatnot, and people aren't going to do that.
This report appeared in the Sunday Dispatch, May 31st, and was quite extensive. You covered – I mean, the names of these colleges were like a who's who of the teams that you see on ESPN on Saturdays during football season. Were you looking particularly at the big schools? Were you surprised at how the larger schools responded compared with some of the smaller ones?
I originally thought that perhaps some of the upper echelon teams, you know, such as Ohio State, Florida, et cetera, would not give us records at all. But there wasn't any. There wasn't any real pattern. I'm trying to think what school it was. Was it Idaho or Boise State? It was one of them that they said, oh, sure, you can come see the records, but you need to fly out here to see them.
Yeah, that was
from
Idaho.
From Ohio to Idaho.
Yeah, the person at Idaho told me that I was welcome to come out to Idaho and view them in person.
So there was no consistency on it didn't matter, big school, little school. Obviously, there were some big schools left out, Penn State, Michigan. For example, Auburn.
And there were some big schools who were open.
And there were big schools that were open.
Such as?
Texas A&M.
Indiana was very open.
Indiana at Purdue.
Were you surprised that they were as open as they were?
Well, I think, you kind of suspect that the bigger the program, the more they're going to be, you know, withholding the records and so forth. I think that is true. So, yeah, there's probably some surprise to that. But, again, the idea was, well, let's just – big school, small school, if they play Division I football, let's just see how they respond to this. And that's – as Jill said, that's where the responses were across the board.
We're talking to Jill Riepenhoff and Todd Jones of the Columbus Dispatch about their 6-month investigation of major universities withholding important information about their sports programs based on provisions in a federal law called the Family Educational Rights and Privacy Act, which was passed 35 years ago. If you'd like to join the conversation, call us at 292-8513 or email openline at wosu.org. Talk about exactly what this law was intended to do as far as protecting students versus how some of the schools are using it now?
I decided that rather than try and there's so many different interpretations that I thought I'd just go to the source. And I tracked down the senator. He was from New York at the time, who crafted this bill. And I talked to him back in November and asked him that. What did you intend to do? It was to protect grades and report cards and to allow parents access to their students' record to make sure a teacher didn't put in there that little Bobby's a nut job. So that was it. That was the bottom line.
And we agree with that. I mean, we're not arguing that we should have access to student records. I mean, I don't want my own children's grades public.
When I called him back after basically with the results of our survey, he was completely stunned, and he said it's run amok. It is not at all what he intended.
How did it get to this point? I mean, why?
That's the million-dollar question. I think that part of it lies with the U.S. Department of Education. They were given wide latitude to draw interpretations, and it has just sort of evolved from there. I don't really quite understand how it went from point A to point Z, but it certainly has.
Talk about some of the things that you uncovered when you did receive answers to your questions, or when you kept digging further and found out the information anyway. Were there any teams that stood out in your mind where there were really egregious instances, such as one of a DUI or an assault of some sort?
I don't know that there was anything that was surprising in that regard. I mean, a lot of it is, I don't want to call it routine, but it happens a lot. I guess I was surprised by things like the University of Iowa withholding information, using FERPA to withhold information about a rape. And there were certainly tidbits in there that we weren't aware of, but I don't know how shocking they are. Like the University of Cincinnati, for example, there was a violation involving their basketball team when Bob Huggins was the coach back in the early part of the decade. I don't know if it's a big deal or not a big deal, because there was not a single word that wasn't blacked out. We don't even know the nature of the NCAA violation.
And I spoke yesterday to the reporter who covers that basketball team, and he said they must have slipped this one by me because he wasn't aware of it. It's never been reported in Cincinnati. And the interesting thing about that specific example is that violation occurred at the very time that the president, Nancy Zimpher, the president of the University of Cincinnati at the time, was basically pushing Bob Huggins out of the door. And the public was in an uproar because Huggins is very popular in Cincinnati. And so you have this violation that happened. Nobody seems to know what it was and never saw the public light. Maybe that could have shed more context on why the president was taking that action.
What I noticed was that you found things like student athletes who were being paid for work that they didn't do, or received gifts or trips or hotel accommodations when they were on various trips. Talk about some of those, because those sound like the more routine ones.
Right. With the Ohio State, there was one that a football player went on a trip to
Los Angeles,
and it was paid for by Adidas. But that's all we really know about it. We don't know who the player was. We don't know how Adidas got involved. We don't know if there was an agent. We don't know if it was a booster. We know nothing. We know no other context for that other than a player did something that is a clear violation of NCAA rules. And when you kind of take that into context, that trip was worth probably hundreds of dollars. They flew on a private jet. In the early 90s, Ohio State got in trouble with the NCAA. It was a major penalty for the recruiting of a kid in which the coach gave him $60 in cash for a meal and travel expenses. That put the program on probation for a year. So it's hard to understand really what's going on because, like, the historical things aren't matching up. But we don't know because the records are so bare.
And the issue here is that these are public universities.
Correct.
Taxpayer dollars support them.
Right. I've heard the argument, for example, why do you need to know the identity of a specific player? And well, the point is that specific player a star player or is he a second string player? Are they being treated the same? Is the walk-on kid who might have maybe mistakenly broke a rule, is he being punished or treated the same as the player? I've always wondered why attorneys don't argue that some of these upper echelon programs or players are public figures. I mean, you're telling me Tim Tebow's not a public figure, Terrell Pryor's not a public figure in Central Ohio. So I think the fact that you have to identify who the player is really puts more context into what's going on in the program.
Okay. And you agree with that, Jill?
Oh, absolutely. And I wanted to talk a little bit about the tax money at play here. Ohio State is different than most of the Division I schools where their athletic department generally is self-sustaining that through ticket sales and TV revenues and whatnot. At most schools, though, perhaps 80 to 90%, that's not the case. It's not the case at, like, Ohio University or Bowling Green.
It's actually even greater than that. The NCAA said in the last 5 years of the 119 programs that we surveyed, the NCAA says only six of them made money. So most
only
of these
six?
Programs are losing money, which means they're taking money from the general funds of their own schools, which means that if you're a family and your student goes to that particular school, even if you have no interest in the sports program at all, you should be interested in this because that sports program's taking money from your school.
But don't those sports programs also bring in big money for these universities?
Some do. And like, for instance, Ohio State, to its credit, you know, their athletic department does contribute money to the general fund. But that doesn't happen in a large scale. I mean, that, for the most part, these athletic departments are draining money from their schools.
It's Southern Methodist University, for example. That's a school that received the NCAA death penalty, which means they lost the privilege to play football for a period of time. To go to the students and faculty members get into those football games now for free. It doesn't cost them a dime, whereas at Ohio State, they're paying, you know, $30, $40, $50, $60 to see the ticket. So that is revenue that is not coming into Southern Methodist University because their school has their football program could never recover from those NCAA troubles in the late 80s.
And that was one of the more extreme examples.
Oh, that was the most extreme example.
Okay. We're talking to Jill Riepenhoff and Todd Jones of the Columbus Dispatch. You can call us at 292-8513 or email openline@wosu.org. Now, Ohio State clearly was not the only target of your investigation, but it certainly was the largest, both in terms of their budget and the number of sports teams. Talk about how big that program is.
Well, it has an athletic budget of $115 million. So in some ways, it's like a major corporation in town. And in many respects, the athletic director, Gene Smith, is like the CEO, which, by the way, I thought it was interesting that on the subject of transparency, the athletic director declined interview requests on that topic. So I thought that kind of spoke to the whole issue itself. But it has the most sports, the biggest program, and in many respects, Ohio State sets the bar for everybody, and it causes what some people call the athletic arms race, the building of facilities, the trying to keep up with the Joneses. Everybody is trying to improve, and so many of these schools don't have the resources or the funds to keep up. It's like they're chasing their tail in a no-win situation. And Ohio State's able, you know, because of its tradition, its vast size, its resources, is able to set the agenda in that respect. So, again, as a public university in Ohio, people should be able to know what's going on inside that public university's athletic department.
And the bottom line in your investigation is that the way the schools are using this law has allowed them not to be accountable
Correct.
For how they're using that money.
Correct. It's very vague. I mean, even when we receive records from Ohio State, it's very vague, and other schools as well, what really truly is going on. And without that transparency and that accountability, you can't find out.
Well, for instance, like this law was intended to protect grades and student records and so forth. And that's – we're not arguing that. But how is it intended to protect a booster at Ohio State who flies on the plane? He doesn't have any grades. He doesn't even go to school there. All we want to know is, does he have access on the plane? Is he going on these trips with the team? And they're saying, well, we can't identify him because if we identify him, then you'll be able to figure out the identity of the player. Well, that seems like a ridiculous –
because that booster was
right.
in the presence
now,
of that
to me
student,
is a ridiculous,
and that becomes a student record in the university's
exactly.
eyes.
So that's a ridiculous extension to the intention of the law, because that's not an valid argument as far as I'm concerned.
If you violate this FERPA law, the Family Rights and Privacy Education Act, if you violate that, the university could lose federal funds. How many schools have actually lost their federal money because of this?
Never. Not once. It's never happened. There's never been any true financial consequence to schools. That said, however, back in the early part of the decade, there was the student newspaper at Miami University wanted to look at student discipline records and put in a public records request. Miami released those records, I believe, and I think then somebody requested the same information from Ohio State. Ohio State was preparing to release those records. The U.S. Department of Education stepped in, halted it, sued Ohio State and Miami and said, those are student records subject to student privacy. You cannot see anything about student privacy. Those are student records. That, in effect, it was costly to Ohio State because they had to use legal resources to defend themselves. So that is probably the most severe action, if you will, that the U.S. Department of Education has ever taken. But in terms of withholding federal funding, that's never happened.
And the reason they haven't withheld any funding is that the Department of Education says you have to show a pattern of behavior of misuse. So if you have an accidental misuse, like you release something when you shouldn't have, it's like, oops, sorry. But if you show a pattern of behavior, that's when they'll take away your federal funding. And nobody has ever shown a pattern of behavior.
Okay. And do we know what is considered under the law a pattern?
No.
Okay. So that's part of the problem.
Exactly.
All right. We're going to take a short break here. This is Open Line on WOSU 820. I'm Charlene Brown. We'll be back in a moment.
The next Fresh Air, New York Times correspondent Dexter Filkins talks about his experiences reporting from Afghanistan and Pakistan on the resurgence of the Taliban. He's on a brief trip to the U.S. before returning to Afghanistan. He covered the war in Iraq for 3 years and is the author of The Forever War. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
And Fresh Air begins in just about 30 minutes. It starts at noon right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Good morning. Thanks for joining us for Open Line. It's 78 degrees at 11:30. WOSU Public Media and the Greater Columbus Arts Council present the 2009 Columbus Arts Festival, June 5th, 6th, and 7th in the Discovery District, with more than 250 nationally acclaimed artists. Visit gcac.org for more information. And be sure to watch Pride of the Buckeyes on WOSU-TV on Wednesday, June 3rd at 8 p.m. WOSU's Emmy Award-winning documentary follows the Ohio State Marching Band from tryouts to a bowl game. Go to WOSU.org for more information. Taking a quick look at the weather forecast, partly sunny today, a chance of afternoon showers, maybe a pop-up thunderstorm, and a high right around 85. Partly cloudy tonight with a chance of rain and thunderstorms tonight as well, and a low of 63. For Wednesday, showers and thunderstorms throughout the day and much cooler with a high of only 68. And now, back to Open Line.
Welcome back to Open Line. I'm Charlene Brown. Our guests are Jill Riepenhoff and Todd Jones of the Columbus Dispatch, and we're talking about their six-month investigation of how the Federal Family Rights and Privacy Act, or FERPA, which was meant to shield student grades from public scrutiny, has now become a way for major college athletic programs to hide information about their programs and their players. What can be done about this situation if the law is subject to such broad interpretation? What do you do about that?
Senator Buckley said that it's time for Congress to take this issue back up and clarify what is and isn't an education record.
And he was the senator sponsored this legislation originally?
Correct. And Ohio Attorney General Richard Cordray has seen the inconsistencies in Ohio, and he has pledged to at least bring Ohio universities under the exact same definition so that you're not getting one thing from Akron and a different thing from Miami, which is the way it is right now.
I mean, think about that for a second. You have a federal law, and how many schools in Ohio? Say six schools in Ohio interpret it differently. Now, how can you have a law that six different schools interpret their own ways?
That's and in fact, in right. The paper, you gave the example of the three schools. It was Canton, Ohio State, and one other. And each one of them responded to your request for the same documents in a different way.
Correct.
Right. I mean, aren't we all supposed to follow the law the same way?
One would think.
Yeah. Either the U.S. Department of Education needs to kind of sit down and make a list and clarify it, or Congress needs to do it. But those are the only ways that it can happen.
Were there any incidents that stood out for you as you went through this process that you uncovered as you asked for this information? The one that struck me was at the University of Texas, where they were charged with a violation because of what happened when one of their players – pro football brother came to the game.
There was a lot of really ridiculous, if you will, things like that it was. I can't remember which school it was in Texas, but it was
University of Texas, El Paso, and the quarterback.
The quarterback's brother was Carson Palmer, the quarterback for the Cincinnati Bengals, and in this violation, they allowed the Carson family access to a place that they shouldn't have because they're not allowed to give special benefits to players' families. But they did that because they didn't want to create a mob scene because Carson Palmer was there. But they withheld all the names out of that document. But I was able to go and look up who the quarterback was, and I figured out – I kind of went through the whole roster to see if there was anyone else who would have had a – professional football playing brother, and he was the only one. So it was a matter of deduction to figure that out.
And again, the question is, why would you keep that secret? Even if that was a violation of NCAA rules, it's a pretty public violation. People have an awareness, at least the ones that are in that area or have some knowledge of the teams. So why would you try to cover that up?
That's kind of the point. What are you trying to hide here? I mean, the idea was not to show that all of college athletics is corrupt and everybody's committing violations. It was basically the idea of, okay, what are you sharing with the public that should be shared, and what are you not sharing? And I was thinking about this the other day. I was thinking, I hear, because my background is in sports writing, I've heard all these years of coaches talking about how sports is important because it's educational value, and I'm not really a coach, I'm a teacher. And I actually believe that to a certain extent. I really do. But what are you teaching a kid if he commits a violation, and just because he's on the team, you can then keep that out of public records? What are you teaching him? That he's special? That just because he commits a violation, he doesn't have to worry about public scrutiny? I just think that's part of what the hypocrisy is that kind of drives me crazy about college sports. As much as I love it, the emotion, the passion, and just the great entertainment of it. There's so many levels of the hypocrisy that just seem to drive you nuts. And a simple issue such as if somebody gets in trouble at a public university, that should be public record.
Well, and you also have to compare it with how a student who is not on one of these major sports teams is treated. Are they treated one way and the athletes are treated a different way? I think we need to know that.
Right. I think that gets back to where somebody said to me yesterday, well, why do you have to know the name of the player who was part of that violation? And Jill made this point very in a good way that, you know, well, how do you know if he's not getting treated or she's not getting treated differently than an athlete in a more so-called minor sport or even on the same team if that athlete's on the third team instead of a starter? So.
And it also brings up issues of academic progress because I know there's been a lot of criticism of many of the programs that their athletes are not graduating. They're not, you know, in some cases, they're not attending classes. They're not really getting an education. They are there as sports figures.
Correct. But that was and we have an online database, searchable database, and one of the schools, I think it's Florida International, their men's basketball team has a graduation rate of zero. Those kids, they're not graduating. They're there to play basketball because academics, obviously, with the zero graduation rate is not what's tops on their list. But I wanted to also sort of add to Todd's point that the importance of oversight, we don't know if Ohio State, for example, is treated differently by the NCAA because they're a big money-making operation compared to Ohio University because they're not. They don't bring in the kind of money. So without the oversight, even one school to the next does not know, you know, is Michigan treated differently than Ohio State? Is Ohio State treated differently than USC? Those kinds of issues without knowing what is going on, you can't see that.
So it really comes down to an issue of fairness, too, and equitable treatment for everyone.
Correct. Because the NCAA, which is the oversight, is the universities. The NCAA does not exist without its members. And does it like some members more than other members? I don't know. It's hard to tell because you can't cross-check things. You can't see, okay, when they had a violation, a recruiting violation at Ohio University, were they treated the exact same way that the player was from the University of Michigan?
We're talking to Jill Riepenhoff and Todd Jones of the Columbus Dispatch about their six-month investigation of how a federal privacy law has been used to generate secrecy among major college athletic programs. You can call us at 292-8513 or email openline@wosu.org. There is a group called the Drake Group who are university professors that are trying to do something about this. Talk about that group and what kind of efforts they've been making.
The Drake Group is a national network of college professors who really want to see a lot more transparency in the academic end of athletics. And what they're looking for is not the quarterback's grades, but they would like to see the classes that football players are taking. They're really focused on the big athletics, men's basketball and football, because those are the two with the worst academic performances. So that's what they're looking. But they're not looking for specific grades, but they're hampered by even getting aggregate data, like what is the GPA of all of the freshmen? That's not going to identify anybody. Or just some very statistical information.
Okay, so there wouldn't be any names attached, but
no.
You could use an entire group and look at, okay, how are they doing academically? What kinds of classes are they taking?
Correct.
Without giving anybody's name.
Correct.
But it would be useful information to give you a snapshot of what is going on educationally for those students.
Correct.
Right. Are they funneling these athletes into majors that are basically are just majors in eligibility. You know, and that again, I mean, there's so many tangents to all these topics. I mean, you could spend an hour just talking about the whole issue of what are these kids graduating, if they're not graduating, what are they graduating in, and the topics that they're studying. So I think what's interesting right now is some of the feedback I've received from people in the last few days is that what you're starting to see in college athletics in general, you're starting to see a lot of different issues where people are starting to nip at the heels of what's going on with the NCAA because the money has grown in such a fantastic manner in the last decade especially.
What was the figure I read? $5
billion
industry?
Yeah, it's a $5 billion industry. And who's overseeing that industry? And what are the issues? You know, you're seeing a lot of different issues. Congress is looking into the fact that the NCAA enjoys a non-tax paying status. You're starting to see issues like the Knight Commission's looking into how much money is being spent on these facilities. FERPA is another issue. I see like Yahoo Sports just did a big story this week about the bowl championship series and the playoff system and how who's controlling all this money and the basic bowl setup. You're starting to see a lot of people starting to nip around a little bit, and I think what we might see is at some point here there's going to be some kind of revolutionary change in the way college athletics is played in the United States, which, by the way, is far different than it is around the world. I mean, it's very unique in the United States that we expect college athletes to entertain us. That's a totally foreign subject around the world. I mean, a hockey player, a kid at a college in Norway who plays hockey, you know, he plays for a professional club and he goes to school. Here it's morphed into this idea that if you play college football at Ohio State, you're also a student. So there's a lot of topics, a lot of things that I think FERPA is hopefully part of a push for many journalists to take a look at what's going on in college sports.
All right. We have a couple callers on the line. Let's take one of those calls now. Dave, you're on Open Line.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, just fine.
Great. Hey, a couple comments and a question. I was reading this on Sunday and talking about it with some friends on Sunday afternoon. They were asking, you know, what's the big deal? Why does anybody really care about these athletics? And I think the one thing you haven't mentioned is it's a government entity that is using a law to get around another law with, you know, sunshine laws and just Freedom of Information Act ruling. Mm-hmm. And if they can cover that up on something that we can agree is pretty unimportant, like Carson Palmer being in an unauthorized area, they can use those same techniques to cover up something that is larger and more important, you know, expenditures, where the money's going, stuff like that. So, and that's the kind of stuff that I think that this really sheds a light on, is just, you know, the kind of a government culture.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, Dave, because the stories were really not about the violations themselves. It was about the idea that you can't see the violations. And that oversight is really what the story was about. Whether or not some of the violations are frivolous in nature really wasn't the point. The point is that this stuff is being hidden. If this is being hidden, why is it being hidden, and what else is being hidden?
And I guess my question would be, in the future, we all know we're kind of a tenuous situation that a lot of the major newspapers are in. A guy running a blog is not taking 6 months out to send out hundreds of requests for information and to follow up on the story and do the story. And I guess my question to y'all is, in the future, if we can't keep a vibrant newspaper industry, who does this?
Well, that's a question we're
excellent
all struggling
question.
With. And to be honest, there's much greater issues in society than collegiate sports. I mean, when you talk about trying to keep oversight on government, for example, but this is an example that we've talked about that ourselves. I mean, if you're going to have a public request like we put out, and one school is going to say, if you want those records, it's $35,000, which is what Maryland did to us as a newspaper. What are they going to do to some guy running a website out of his home or a small staff that doesn't have the resources or the funds to do this type of reporting? I mean, we're lucky to still be able to do this at the Dispatch, but it's kind of scary when you think about it because it's a broad topic that I think the nation faces.
We're talking to Jill Riepenhoff and Todd Jones of the Columbus Dispatch about their investigation of how a federal privacy law is being used by major universities to withhold information about the inner workings of their athletic programs. You can call us at 292-8513 or email openline at wosu.org. We also have Jerome on the line. Jerome, hello there. You're on Open Line.
Hi. I've got a question. It's a little off topic. I'm wondering if in the course of your investigation you've seen how the athletic programs and the power of the athletic programs have influenced things downstream. It seems to me that, from my experience, that in this area, OSU has such gravity. At my child's elementary school, they actually have Buckeye Day, and they don't celebrate OSU's intellectual and academic achievements. It's all about the sports. And my children, their godmother was an Ann Arbor, Michigan professor, and they were afraid of wearing the shirts she gave them because they were afraid not of the other kids, but of the teacher's responses.
Okay.
And so I'm wondering if you have anything other than sort of anecdotal information about the influence of college-level athletics, how it distorts K through 12. And I'll take your answers offline.
Thank you, Jerome. Appreciate your call.
We have no concrete evidence, but certainly anecdotal evidence. I mean, in Columbus and Ann Arbor and Tallahassee, the colleges are the largest employers. They're the face of the community. So I think it just naturally has a trickle-down effect. And wherever you are, you want to be associated with the winning team. So if you're in Athens, Ohio, you're cheering for the Bobcats. If you're in Miami, you're cheering for the Hurricanes. It's just the nature of how we as a society view college sports. And we're brought up to, you know, be a Buckeye or a Gator or whatever. I mean, it's just sort of ingrained, especially if you grow up in those college towns.
I think what's related to that, I mean, and that's in many respects, that's the fun of college athletics too. I mean, it is a lot of passion and we all love that. I think what's kind of related to that though is you have you can have situations where the school realizes it has some power because it has such a following. And it can play games with public records, for example, because if you stretch it out over months, the paper's just going to go away, and nobody's going to care if the paper writes it anyway. Who cares if Jordan Palmer and his brother were somewhere? And they can kind of use the fact that they're the popular kid in school, pardon the pun, to leverage that in terms of how they respect even public record laws. I know this, for example. I went to the University of Kentucky in the mid-'80s, and the newspaper there, the Lexington Herald Leader, won a Pulitzer Prize because it went after the basketball program and revealed a lot of violations. Well, I was an agate clerk, worked at sports at night, and one night we had to evacuate the building because of a bomb threat after that series was published. That shows you what kind of power that these fan bases have. And once again, if newspapers aren't going to try to put oversight on what's going on, well, who really is?
And we have an email now from Kelly. She says, things will improve when any given school has the courage to emphasize academics over athletics. Unfortunately, she says, schools care little, if at all, about a student's personal growth beyond the playing field. Do you agree with that?
Somewhat. I mean, I'm pretty cynical about it all, but I don't think like every coach and every program is just using these kids as hamburger and churning them out. And you know, I think in totality the system is exploitive. At the same time, I get back to the point that, you know, if you're a student athlete and you go into college, really the choice is yours. Do you want to be used? Do you want to allow them to use you? Ultimately, you have some responsibility too. So sometimes when I feel like, well, the coach never graduates anybody, nobody ever stood behind me and made sure I graduated. So it's a debate there. I go back and forth a little bit on that, but I don't know. How do you feel, Jill?
It's also some of the policies and practices of the NCAA, of the NFL, of the NBA. The NBA, for example, says you have to now be 1 year out of high school before you can play professional basketball. So then you have this revolving door. They're forcing this revolving door at the colleges where kids are coming for 1 year because that's how long they have to wait. They are using the colleges as a farm system to the NBA. And Ohio State's basketball program, for example, their academic scores have suffered greatly because of that. Greg Oden left early. B.J. Mullins left early. Who's the other?
Costa
Kufos left early. Those things have affected how Thad Matta's academic performances. It's not necessarily fair to him or the rest of the team. And that's just the way it is. That's the rules. It's nothing that he can change or do anything about.
And I think one thing that needs to be pointed out, too, is that we're talking about the higher echelon athletics in college. I mean, when we're talking about the top 50 programs, I mean, there are thousands and thousands of athletes in college who perform for sports at smaller schools at a much smaller scale, and the system is not nearly the same for them. And I think sometimes we tend to forget that because we're only focused on the tip, you know, the top programs. But that's why I'm not totally cynical about college athletics and what it means. But when you look at the top systems, that's when so many questions creep into what's going on here.
More money and lots more at stake. Let's take another call. This one from David. Hello, David. You're on Open Line.
Hey, how are you?
All right. How are you?
Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
You know, the question I had, which we went over earlier, was a simple question concerning the NCAA, how it's funded, if every school indeed pays the same amount of money to be a member, or if, like I asked you, Slippery Rock pays $5, Ohio State pays $100,000 to be a member. And then after that, I've been listening to the things that have been talked about, and I think every one of them has an answer that your guests, who are pretty cool, by the way, and I take it's very gutsy to get on and do this, I think, especially in Ohio and Columbus.
Yeah.
You know, so, but in addition, you know, when they say it only matters to big schools, winning is big schools. Well, I think it matters to every school because I think every school wants to at least beat somebody. I think there's a rivalry that they want to come out on top. I also think, and anytime I talk too much, just stop me because I can go on forever after listening to you because
okay.
You've touched so many subjects and you've done such a great job.
Thank you.
But one of the things is, like, in here, if you think about the United States, we pretty much invented the word nerd. We invented the concept. So therefore, the only thing that's important is winning. The only thing is important is being the best in the world. And it's the same thing in college athletics. You got to be the best. And to be the best, most people cheat, which we see all the time.
I don't know if we could say most people cheat. We certainly know that there are plenty of people who do.
I
don't know that we can go out on a limb and say most people do. But how about if we let Jill and Todd respond to what you've said so far, David?
Okay, just one more thing.
Okay.
Most big programs cheat. If you look over the last 2 or 3 years, everyone is involved in something. Everyone. I would venture to say. Now, I'd love to listen to some of them. And if you have a few more minutes, I do have a few more points.
Okay, David. Thank you for your call.
Well, I think the very nature of sport is competition and to win, and I don't think that's inherently bad. I mean, that's why you keep score, right? I'm not one of these guys who thinks that everybody should get a cupcake after the game just because we all tried hard. It's sports, and you're trying to win no matter what level you're playing at in college. That said, when you couple in the tremendous amount of money that's at stake for these top athletic programs, it creates an atmosphere where there's going to be temptation to cheat or cut corners. And it's going to create atmospheres where boosters want to get around the program because it's so cool to be part of the winning team. And that gets back to what this whole thing was about, was the oversight. And if you're trying to keep an eye on who is around the team, who might be causing problems for the team by slipping money to some kid when nobody seems to be looking, that's what this whole idea of FERPA was really about. And you can go on and on about the great themes in college athletics, but I think, you know, what we were here to talk about was basically, you know, we public universities especially, these records should be open to the public. They have a stake in that, whether or not you like sports or not. And there should be a level of oversight.
And Jill, your thoughts on that?
I think Todd, it was well said.
Okay. to sum it all up.
Wow, imagine that.
Now, he did mention that it was gutsy of you to do this. This is a major sports enterprise here in Columbus, to look at OSU in addition to the other scores of schools that you looked at. Have you gotten any kind of angry reactions?
No, and frankly, I'm somewhat surprised by that. Other newspapers who have written stories, the Ann Arbor News took a look at academic misconduct at Michigan. The Seattle Times did a wonderful piece on the Washington Huskies football team from 2000, I believe it was. And reporters at both of those papers were, you know, received all kinds of angry, hateful reactions. And in fact, I had heard from someone else that the reporters at the Ann Arbor News eventually, like, left town. It was that bad.
Well, I didn't anticipate it was going to be like that, and I don't know if it's really gutsy. I mean, you know, we're just kind of trying to do our job as journalists. I think one of the things that I found is the lack of any outrage is that really, even if you're a fan, it's kind of hard to argue this point. I mean, when the facts in regards to violations are right there in the records, as redacted heavily as they are, there's still certain things you can claim, and there they are. So you reproduce the records themselves. How is that a newspaper or journalist's fault? And I think, you know, when the guy who wrote the bill that became the law, when the Attorney General of Ohio says that this is a problem, it's kind of hard to argue against that. So I think it's a little different. As somebody who used to write an opinion about the local sports scene and used to wade through emails every day reminding me that I'm an idiot, I really didn't think it was going to be as inflammatory with the hardcore fans. And so I'm not as surprised by that.
Have you gotten any responses where people say, thank you for doing this? We appreciate you doing this.
Actually, I got some fans, a couple emails from fans. Hey, I'm a diehard Buckeye fan. I love the Bucks. And I want to thank you for some perspective about all this. And then ends with Go Bucks. And I think that's, you know, when you think about it, if you really love your team, you should want to know what's going on. And you should want to be proud of them inside and out. And whether it's Ohio State or Michigan or Iowa or Timbuktu University. I mean, if you love your squad, you should want to know what's happening. And that's all really this is about.
My dad is a big Ohio State fan, and I did not tell him anything that I was working on. So when he picked up his newspaper on Sunday morning, that was the first that he heard of it. And I purposely did that because I didn't want to have any, you know, work discussions with him. But I also wanted to see how a diehard Buckeye would react. And his reaction was, good job, interesting stuff, who knew? So that for me was a pretty good indicator that the people really do want to know. Just level with them. Just tell them what's going on.
And I also think that, you know, this was not like an editorial. I mean, we're not arguing about we deserve to know these kids' grades. This was we're saying Ohio State and these other schools are saying they're interpreting the law correctly. We're saying no, you're not. The guy who wrote the bill says no, you're not. The Attorney General of Ohio says there's something wrong here. So it's not like we were taking an opinion stance on this. So I think in that ways it's kind of hard to have uproar about it.
All right. Jill Riepenhoff, Todd Jones of the Columbus Dispatch. We've been talking about their 6-month investigation of college sports. We thank you both for being with us. And this is listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus, streaming on the web at wosu.org. WOSU 820, NPR News.